Just take microphone 1, 2.
So I have a question for you. You're constantly on the road, going to film not just this, but your other stuff. What are you seeing on the roads lately after it's rained?
After it has rained?
Mm.
What I'm seeing on roads, floods. I'm seeing roads are being eaten side by side by water. I'm seeing people dying on the roads because of floods. I'm seeing slippery roads. They become slippery. I'm seeing accidents. I'm seeing trees falling in the roads. Like, literally, I see cutting off of the roads, and you have to use another road, which is actually sometimes longer.
So I like that explanation of what you're saying. The next couple of episodes of the podcast that we're going to be getting into are going to look into more detail. And we're going to do that through two engineers. We're asking ourselves, why are these floods happening? How can we be better prepared for them in the future? So thank you, William, for that take. It sort of centers where we're going to be going in the next couple of days. Dr. Max Chigobe is an engineer and his specialism is hydrology and water management. He's a senior lecturer in water resources, hydrology and climate change at Makerere University, and he's done a huge amount of research modeling Uganda's historical rainfall patterns. So he knows the deep historical context to the rainfall that we are having now. When he came into the studio, I asked him what he makes of what we've been seeing of the floods on TV, cars and vans trapped in torrents of water, and people needing to be rescued in Kampala and in other places.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge because I would say Kampala is growing greatly. We have a lot of buildings coming up, and we need this as well. But the issue also can be, if you've built up infrastructure, have you planned drainage for that infrastructure? And if it's being planned, where is it being taken to? Is it all going to Makshon Bay for the whole of Kampala? Is Makshon Bay still functional enough to associate with the growth of the city? These are very, very great, great questions.
Think about Pakwach.
Yes.
And the floods there recently. We saw that as well.
Yep.
What are you thinking?
Now, Pakwach is in a very dry rainfall zone. And because of that, it doesn't stop it from being affected by our climate change. So it's a dry area, limited vegetation. If climate change comes in, the water will come and have a very destructive pattern over the surfaces because of the vegetation. And I would say, because it's a dry area, we have to think for them as well. How can we plan for them to have the right channels also in case we have these patterns of climate coming in which have changed from the past when things were stable? And population growth is another issue because you are having a lot of infrastructure coming up even away from the urban centers. But as we planned for the drainage of those infrastructure which are coming up, especially for the residential areas.
And this is not happening now.
I wouldn't say it's not happening, but it needs to be more intensified.
What would be ideal? Look at Pakwach, for example. What would be the ideal immediate solution? Then the medium term, then the long-term plan.
For the short term, the ministries could help out. And have these very, very supportive actions to the area. Can we have enough of these very intense and thorough construction people to come in and build up drainage channels for those areas. That would be a very helpful one. But in the long term, can we also plan for them and think that rainfall is going to intensify? If it intensifies, how are we going to build the roads over Pakwach area? What kind of size do we have for the drainage channels for those areas? Because most times, even the roads are built without having that kind of thinking about the drainage patterns over the roads. So where is the rainfall going to come from to flood on this road? And how do you kind of plan for that flooding? How do you plan for that kind of intense rainfall, which may appear once in a while, but again, very destructive if you look at it when it appears?
And when we say more rainfall, are we speaking in terms of intensity, or are we speaking in terms of every day with raining?
We are thinking of both the intensity and also the totals you have on monthly averages. For example, yesterday it rained so much, and you could say, how come we're having all this rainfall the entire day? But if you think about the whole month again, ask yourself, how much will the rainfall be for this whole month? Is it going to be the standard rainfall you used to have in the 1960s, 1990s, or has it changed? And the fact is that it's actually changed.
Are we factoring? Do you see us factoring in these changes, this now heavier and more frequent rainfall, in our planning for our infrastructure?
We need to factor that in, and that's a very, very serious observation you're trying to ask. But the question is, if someone is designing infrastructure, who is the person concerned? Is the person sponsoring that factoring in and having the right kind of drainage patterns, or the drainage infrastructure, or the infrastructure which can cater for additional rainfall overflows on the surfaces?
Give me an example.
An example could be the whole of Kampala. We have a lot of rainfall coming up. We have a lot of buildings coming up. But ask yourself, do you have the right drainage for the entire of Kampala? Maybe not. If you get out of the urban areas, it can be different because they have good vegetation. So when you look at vegetation as well, and vegetation comes in terms of land use, so if the land use also changes, it can be a very challenging issue. Because by land use change, you can think about urban growth. You have cities coming up, but have you planned smartly for the drainage of those cities coming up? Have you planned smartly for the buildings which are being built up in these smaller countries which are getting much smaller towns which are getting much bigger with our growth in economy? So it's a very, very challenging issue.
You said you are into hydraulic modeling for most of our challenging water flow structures.
Yes.
What does that mean and look like?
By hydraulics, you're looking at the flows of water. If it rains, how does water flow over the surfaces? It may go into a drainage channel. But is the channel built to contain all the capacity which is flowing in? The bigger it gets, the more expensive it can be. And then it can be disturbing for the funder, or even for the constructor, to get into that. A good example can be Northern Bypass. I designed the drainage capacity of Northern Bypass around 20 years back. But the whole of Northern Bypass doesn't flood. And because we use the right kind of estimation of a higher return period, it was expensive to build the road, but as you see, you have better results.
Give me a paint a picture for me. So you're sitting with a team. Who is part of this team that's then making the decision and understanding why certain decisions have to be made the way they're made to end up with a Northern Bypass that's now not flooding? And the reason I'm asking this is because I want to then understand why other places that also had a team are not doing as well as the bypass.
Well, when I was involved with that Northern Bypass, I was still a junior. I was trying to find my levels of interest in terms of expanding my capacity, intellectual capacity. And I felt so disturbed when you'd see everyone kind of getting so disturbed when you're trying to look at where Northern Bypass is going to pass. Because you'd walk through the valleys and see where the bypass is going to pass. But right now, we have the issue of integration. Can we try to be integrated in all our designs, in all our research? The ministry needs to cooperate a lot with the university. And I'm talking about the Ministry of Water and Environment.
Mm.
At the same time, even the NGOs need to cooperate with the ministries and also with the university. And I would say, if there's even room for capacity in terms of the juniors, if you train the juniors to enhance their ability to work and think smart for the future, the better for us all. So it's a very, very challenging issue. And I would say, if we can think together, as in integrated thinking, integrated planning, integrated management of water resources, the better for all of us in the country.
Who needs to be on the table for a good road network, for example, or a good bridge, or whatever infrastructure you decide? Who needs to be on that table? So you have engineers, you have the ministries. Who else?
I would say it's a challenging question, but I would say all of us need to be on the table. Because most times when you're designing, even a social scientist needs to come in and think about, whom are you designing for? How many are they? An engineer won't tell you how many people are going to be in that area. So you need to have that kind of integrated planning.
So someone has to come and say, right now the population in this area is this, but exactly, in the next 10, 20 years, this is what we might be looking at. So we have to plan for this number of people.
That's the point. So if you can think about that, we need to have that very wide integrated planning, especially from the top. Because the top have the connections, the top people have the funders, the top people have all the links to those who can support us. So if you can try also to grade down to that spirit and think about the locals, how can we get the locals also involved? And by the locals, I even involve the universities in terms of the university research students. Many of the students are interested in learning, but they don't have support in terms of buying data, buying models, buying computers. And yet you have a lot of available capacity to build their passing on of this knowledge and their building on of this knowledge. So you need to have that very wide range integrated planning and thinking. If the ministries can also involve universities in terms of their planning, it will be a very useful and helpful way to life ahead.
I mean, why not make use of this resource that's available in their planning? It sounds like common sense.
Well, it's a challenge, but most times we wouldn't get to know what's being planned. We only get to know when things are ready, commercialized, and things are already officiated. And that's the challenge we have, which is a very big challenge. But I would say, if you can integrate also the academic society into the planning, it would help a lot.
Have you ever at any one point doubted the existence of climate change, the reality of climate change?
I would say I've never, because of my research background. Because when I tried to model it, I was extremely very shocked about it. I had to model and predict climate for the 2020s, 2040s, 2060s, and 2080s. And as I would say, things are actually happening. So I would say before then, I was a bit skeptical about it. Am I having the right results? But actually, they are actually happening right now. And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse by 2060s, by 2080s. So the question is, how can we build up on these predictions? How can we get more research worked on? I haven't mentioned groundwater, but even our groundwater is going to be affected. And why? Because we have vegetation which is being degraded. And if you don't have enough vegetation, you're going to have a lot of degradation of the groundwater. So can we think about that as well? Because groundwater is something you also rely on, especially in rural areas.
Yeah.
But do you have the right water levels being maintained? Has anyone done research on groundwater levels for most of these rural areas? And that's an issue which we haven't thought about so much greatly. And we need to think beyond the borders and also expand our research areas. So I'm talking about quantity issues, but again, think about water quality issues. Another story. And do you have enough water quality maintained for our urban areas? Think about Kampala itself. Go to a borehole and pick up water. Is it as clean as it should be? So we have that integrated approach we need to enhance and build on as a university, also as a ministry, and also even other ministries like agriculture, Ministry of Health, and also our urban managers.
Dr. Max Chigobe, engineer and senior lecturer in water resources, hydrology, and climate change at Makerere University. I found this chat fascinating, in part because engineers often seem to have a very clear problem-solving focus. This is the problem, these are the steps that we can take to fix it. And that's a really powerful way of approaching the challenges of climate change, which are so huge, and there's so many of them happening at once, and they seem to be overwhelming. So in our next episode, we'll continue our focus on infrastructure and climate change from an engineering perspective, and the challenges and the opportunities that we see. As ever, drop us a line at climatetalkpod@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch. And just a reminder that you can check out our full interview with Dr. Max Chigobe and all our other guests on the podcast by going to our YouTube channel, CSJ Uganda. I'm Josephine Karunji. See you next time.